Let's go! One on three! One, two, three!
You're listening to the best of the Dolphins.
Yeah, y'all boys, man. Keep your hands up to one, two,
a weekly mix of AM 560 Sports, WQAM's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
I know you've got a game coming up. With things not going the way you planned this season, have you thought about your future? Have you thought about Chris Greer's future, whether you'll be here next season? Does that concern you at all right now?
No, I think I'm very comfortable with the realities of the realities within the profession that I've chose. Like, I think the alternative would be to feel entitled. I think you're it's very much I don't take for granted getting a team prepared for this week's opponent and this day and those opportunities. And I think you'd ultimately, you know what it is when you sign up for it. And I'm not worried about that in the slightest. I think that would be absolutely selfish and something that I, you know, if I'm worried about that, I'm definitely not worried about the things that I have to offer the players that are playing in a professional football game. So, I think the season hasn't gone the way anybody necessarily had wanted, but that, how often do we say that in life in general? I think my job is not to predict and expect. My job is to adjust ultimately, if you're gonna fall short in certain ways, then what you do is you make those reasons for improvement as you move forward. But we have enough to worry about with the San Francisco 49ers, and I don't take that lightly, neither does our team, which is what I expected to walk into today. You never know. I certainly was met with that type of focus and energy from the football team, which is means that the guys are who I thought they were, and that's where our sole focus is.
Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel there. It's time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline Shop. Hundreds of Toyotas indoors, one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan.
All right, Woody, thank you so much. Kimbo Camper just coming through the door, and now Adam Beasley from Pro Football Network joins us. The Bees.
I always seem to come in when the Bees are on.
Yeah, you got to have a little Bees.
Yeah.
You got to have a little Bees in your life.
Bees on, yeah.
Adam,
what an 8 o'clock hour, fellas, right?
Yeah, well, I got
it. What about that softball that Perk's throwing around out there?
Hey, Perk. Perk's all over the place. First of all, you know, Perk just got ripped for saying, give everybody another year. That just got him crushed. So then he came back, and he goes, well, if you do, you got to get rid of both of them at the same time. Perk's all over the place, man.
Yeah, I'm never one. Look, I understand the idea of, you want to have harmony, the GM and the coach, you want them to be on the same page, but there have been coaches that have survived the GM change and done good things, and vice versa. There have been GMs that have decided, hey, this coach isn't the right guy, and then they find the right coach. I mean, it's not always as black and white as that. I understand that you need to have a good working relationship there. When your coach and your GM are at each other's throats, it's not going to go well. We saw certainly how that ended in 2021 with Brian Flores and Chris Greer. I'll say this. I don't have enough evidence yet to say, hey, Mike McDaniel's not the guy. We've got a quarter century of Chris Greer at this point, right? And we have 6 years of him as a GM, and guys, those numbers aren't great, right? And 6 years since Chris Greer's had full autonomy of the roster. I know he was GM before that, but it was Mike Tannenbaum's show. So really, when the Flores era began, that's really when the Greer GM era began. The stats aren't good, man. They're 50-47, I think, in those 3 years with a negative 87-point differential and 0-2 in the playoffs. any other GM would be absolutely on the hot seat. Why is it that Chris Greer should be immune to any of that? I think he should have a close examination of the ups and downs, and certainly there have been some good decisions, but there have been not nearly enough of them. And there have been lines upon lines of GMs that are filing for unemployment who haven't had a record as bad as Chris Greer has in 6 years. So if I'm Stephen Ross and I'm concerned about the long-term health of the franchise, concerned about the enthusiasm of the fan base, maybe renewals, I would say it's time for a change, and let's get some fresh blood in here. Let's have a new philosophy, and if the head coach is on board, great. If not, he can go too.
You think, I call him the core five. I don't know if you're with me. Jalen Ramsey, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Tua, and Bradley Chubb. You expect all five of them to be back? I know Tua is going to be back in the starting quarterback. What about the other four?
You ran through those fast. Let's go through them one at a time. Tua, yes. Waddle, yes. Ramsey, unless he forces his way out, yes. Who are Armstead and Tyreek? Were those the other two?
Bradley Chubb and Tyreek Hill.
Bradley Chubb and Tyreek Hill. Those are the two I'm a bit more dubious about. It'll be very interesting to see what they do with Bradley Chubb. I know yesterday Mike McDaniel says it's players' careers, and if every opportunity they have to play is a gift, and I get that. I totally understand that. If I'm Mike McDaniel, it's like, Bradley, we love you. We want you for 2025. There's zero upside for you playing aside from making you feel like you're a contributor to this team, which is understandable. I get that. This team is lost. This season is lost. It'll probably be lost even more on Sunday because I don't think they beat the 49ers, right? This season is over. And he has a $10 million guarantee that triggers if he's injured. If he can't pass a physical at the start of the new year, I think it's March 14th or something like that, he's guaranteed another $10 million. And that removes the possibility of them moving on from him. And so they've got to protect themselves. If they think, hey, we can get out of this Chubb contract, it hasn't been, you know, certainly the injuries hasn't been what we wanted. It's time for a fresh start. Maybe the new GM who isn't tied to these players didn't make those trades, makes that decision. I would not play him, and I would think long and hard about if he is part of the future. Tyreek Hill, I've written, I trade that guy. I think it's time to do it. I think it's time to move on from Tyreek. His antics, the absurd cryptic tweets undermining your coach. He always plays this troll and acts like, oh, wasn't serious. At some point, enough's enough, right? Enough of your nonsense, Tyreek. Enough of it. This team has bent over backwards to defend you, to protect you. You've embarrassed them at times. You've had no shows at times. Yes, you've had some incredible moments as well. And 1,700 yards in back-to-back seasons is a phenomenal achievement. How many playoff wins has it gotten them, right? How many? Let's think about this. This is a fun conversation, guys. And maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. How many signature catches do you have of Tyreek that were meaningful against big-time opponents in big-time games? A lot of those stats come against the Denver Broncos of the world in the 70-20 blowout, right? I mean, there's a body of evidence that suggests that he is not a big-time wide receiver for the Miami Dolphins. And if that's the case, why are you paying him $30 million a year? I think it's time to move on.
Well, you know, he's probably got as many big plays as Tua's got big plays because they kind of go hand-in-hand on that. And also, look, I agree with you on Bradley Chubb. You know, this team's not going to go to the playoffs.
You wouldn't play him both the rest of the year?
No, I would not. I mean, what's
what are you doing if he wants to play, though? So, he's screaming.
So what? He comes out and to me, give him another year of rehab. Give him a year to continue to strengthen that leg and get, because I just don't see the value of playing him. So now let me step back one time. Let's step back to the Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer, if you don't mind.
All right, go ahead.
Let me ask you this: who has more gravitas with Stephen Ross, Chris Greer, or Mike McDaniel?
Well, you know the answer there. You know who the buddy is.
I don't know that answer anymore.
Yeah. You don't?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I mean, Greer and Ross have been, you know, two peas in a pod for a very, very long time, right? And, you know, Greer's the one who's in his ear.
Loyalty there.
I get that. I totally get that. Yeah. At some point, Stephen Ross has a fiduciary duty to his fans, to the other people in the organization. And loyalty goes a very long way, and I think that that check has been cashed. Okay, 6 years as a GM, zero playoff wins, two playoff appearances. That check has been cashed. There's no one else that would survive that. Particularly, Bo, this would be my argument. Steve Ross gave Chris Greer everything he's asked for. Everything. You want a tank? You want to blow it up and start from scratch and go get the quarterback you want? Do it. You want your pick of your head coach? Do it. You want your pick of your second head coach? And I know Ross had a much bigger say the second time around than the first. Go for it. You want to trade high draft picks for Tyreek Hill and Bradley Chubb and give them $1 billion or whatever? Do it. And you know what it's gotten him? Nothing but a pissed off fan base.
This is about as loud as I've heard it for Chris Greer. Would you agree? This is the loudest by far I've heard here on the radio.
There's been so much patience. And look, like part of me feels bad because Chris is one of the nicest human beings.
One of the nicest guys. Yeah. That's part of the survival, right? Part of it is he's a really good dude.
Yep, he is.
Not that always, I talk to him, but he's a good guy.
Well, always gracious when talk to you. Always gracious when you see him. He is, you know, he's not the most media accessible guy, but when he makes himself available, he says thoughtful things, and he's a nice guy. Great family. He's been part of the Miami Dolphins DNA for a quarter century, but it's been the worst quarter century in Miami Dolphins history.
Yeah. Hey, let's move on. Jaylen Waddle play this week?
I wouldn't play any of these guys. He might, but...
These guys want to get to 9-8. I'm just going to tell you, Beast, these guys want to get to 9-8. They want 5 years, because I've already heard it. Their goal now is 5 years to tell everybody we've had a winning record for 5 years, the first time since, what did Omar write, since Jimmy Omar wrote something about
Look,
it.
Look, I was down on the sideline. I mean, he literally was right in front of me when he had that injury. And I watched him go in the locker room. I watched him come. He wanted to play in the worst way. He wanted to play in the worst way. And that's the only thing I would think that he's going to push his way in to play. I think he wants to play. I don't think I don't think it's a surgical thing. I think it's just it's something. Because look, I saw him running up and down the field in the sidelines, and he was
going pretty good.
He was pushing it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and I get that, but that game had an enormous value to the franchise.
No, I get it. But look, I think players want to play. That's what they're about. They want to play. You can go to a party with a bunch of NFL players, and if someone throws a football out in the street, they'll get a game going.
Yeah.
You know, it's just in your blood, you know?
Let me ask you, just to take it one step further, the other one is Teron. Do you play your second-round pick, or does Teron come back and play at left tackle this week?
I mean, look, Patrick Paul's played pretty good, right? I mean, he hasn't – like, there's been a lot of problems with that offensive line. He's been okay. I totally understand and respect where you're coming from, guys, as former players. I 100% get it. I don't have that. I'm just some Weasley sports writer, okay? I'm just some nerd here sitting in the press box. I think about the long-term health and viability of the franchise.
Yeah.
And again, I get it. These guys want to save their jobs. Okay, let me ask you this. If you're Steve Ross, is beating the bad 49ers – the bad Browns, the bad Jets, going to make any difference in your mind?
No.
That's the thing. You've seen this. Like, they're going to probably – they'll probably go 8-9 or 9-8, right? They'll probably win these games because that's what they do against bad teams. It's meaningless. It is meaningless. They have – and I wrote this in my column when I called for Greer's job. The last 2 years, they've been the best of the mediocres. That's what they've been. They haven't been great. They've been the best of the mediocres. They're not even that anymore.
Yeah, no, it's hey, listen, man, I'm with you on this. By the way, can I ask you the mystery of Blake Ferguson?
Oh.
I'm just curious. So help me out. I've watched this thing, and I'm going, so we're bringing in long snappers like I used to. Well, I don't want to get into what I used to do because that was not going to go well with what I was going to say. My wife, current
you
wife,
you
would
wear
not your be happy.
A couple of times and throw them out?
Right. So let me ask you. So – he's long snapper. Now we're bringing in guys. They're going, no, we're going to leave Blake. No, we're a few more weeks. Now we're just going to put him on IR. I'm trying to figure, this has got to be yips. Like, that one bad snap had to carry into a whole bunch of problems. That's the only thing it can be. Can it be a personal problem?
I'm really, really hesitant to speculate when it comes to mental health. Okay, so
it is mental health, that's a different animal. Unless you think that falls under... yips.
I don't know. And again, we just don't know. Sometimes you guys can speak to this as well. What you're doing with outside the building impacts inside the building. It might not be what's going on inside the building is the reason he's not, you know, on that roster. So again, I don't want to speak to that. They really thought that he was going to be back and that he was close. He's dealing with something.
Yeah, no question about it. There is no question. And by the way, if it is mental health, like I've said, and gotten in trouble with getting after some guys that get after me, and everybody goes, they throw the mental health card at me, I'm sorry. Okay, I get it. I know we got it, but
I don't know if Blake's done that though. I think he's kept his head down, and he, like, I mean, his politics. Some people go after him for that, and.
Out of politics, they aren't keeping him off the field.
That's not it. But but even when people clap back at him for his politics, it's different with this. I think.
And I agree. I hope he's okay. I just finish with that? I hope he's all right.
I'm going to give him some grace because I have no idea what the situation is. But again, if the Dolphins thought he could play, he would probably be playing.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah, no question. You got a guy there, and all right. I noticed the whole room got dead on that topic, so you know. I noticed everybody dumped me like a bad day. My wife just looked at me and went, "Did you have to say that?" Now everybody's gone.
I've never seen a situation where you got these guys coming off the practice squad and they can only be up for 3 weeks,
right? So you're gone.
This is like three. We've got our third iteration. The three game guy.
Right.
Right.
And here's the thing is that Danny Crossman was asked specifically that like a month and a half ago, is this a situation where you're just going to recycle the long snappers 3 weeks and then you got to, you know, get them out because they're out of their eligibility? He's like, no, absolutely not. That is a terrible way to go about coaching. So this was never the plan. Something lingering is going on here.
Yeah.
And again, without any nearly enough information, I don't want to speculate on it.
Well, but look, since this has happened, there have been three poor snaps that really created some problems in this since this has been going on. You know, there's like the first game, the new guy in there snaps it over the shoulder of the holder, and Sanders misses the field goal. There was a low snap in Green Bay.
Yeah,
that the kick punter had to go down in field and hit a little sidewinder on the other side. And then there was another snap. I forget which one it was, but I've counted three bad snaps over that time.
Well, man, those guys aren't going to be perfect.
And we saw one bad snap from
Ferguson.
Blake.
Like, that's it.
Since he's been here, right?
Yeah, that's why it's what's crazy. He's been absolutely perfect. Hell, he got an extension. Hey, we'll let you run here, but Bees, man, good stuff this morning. I didn't. Yeah, I think
Bees, you just threw a lot of dirt around.
Boy,
here,
did
man.
You? You so got that, after you? Kind of got
must
me.
Must have jumped on with a shovel or something.
Listen, I've been on this beat since 2012. You guys have been around this franchise for decades. Sometimes enough's enough, right?
Yeah, I get you.
All right, hey Bees, thank you. Appreciate you coming on.
All right, fellas.
Adam Beasley from Pro Football Network. Whew, man, all right. Hey, Beverly's Jewelers. Let's go right to Beverly's. Bo, we got to get to Beverly's Jewelers. Got a few days left, man, to score big. Jeff and Amanda, that's father and daughter, over there saying, Joe, send them over. We got something for everybody. You know that. You know you've been coming for – you guys been coming for more than 30 years to Beverly's Jewelers. During the holiday season, want to score big. They have a huge selection of earth-grown and lab-grown certified diamonds backed by their low-price guarantee. You're not going to find the same diamond for less anywhere. Plus – Beverly's has an unbeatable selection of diamond studs, tennis bracelets, and jewelry for every style and occasion. Save big with discounts 50 to 70% off select items, or you can just craft a piece that is truly one of a kind with their state-of-the-art design studio. Just bring in a picture of what you want, let them get to work. With interest-free financing and free gift wrapping, Beverly's makes the holiday shopping so much easier. Look, I go in there by myself, and I got no idea. But Amanda does. I'll tell you what, she's really good, man. Hey, they'll buy your jewelry right on the spot. They'll buy your gold right on the spot. You need extra cash, bring it in. I trust Beverly's and have for a long, long time. Go to their Fort Lauderdale showroom. That's on Commercial Boulevard. Or shop online at bevjewelers.com. I'd really recommend you go down there. They got great staff, really professional, great stuff, and really something for everybody that scores big for the holiday season. This holiday season, discover why Beverly's Jewelers really is where South Florida gets engaged.
All right, let's talk a little Dolphins, Ben. So there's been Sunday's game, I had said yesterday, was kind of one of those straw that broke the camel's back games for a lot of people who write about the Dolphins, root for the Dolphins. By just going off the top of my head, Adam Beasley, Dave Hyde, and pretty much Barry Jackson all wrote columns saying that Chris Greer has to go. Where do you stand on what seemingly is going to be a Dolphin season where they don't make the playoffs?
Well, I find that interesting that it's the GM that has to go and not the coach, because I would think at minimum, if you're going to say that the guy, I don't know. I always think that the coaches have such a big impact on the game, and that, like this year, the Patriots' entire draft class, other than Drake May, is terrible. So is it the fact that the front office picked every single player they picked is wrong, or is that the coaches don't know how to develop and use these guys and get the most out of them? And if the Dolphins continuously are losing to teams with winning records and they can't win these big games and it's becoming a feature, not a bug of the program, why would the head coach be absolved of all of it? I don't see Mike McDaniel's team having accomplished anything given all the talent that they have on offense. I mean, Chris Greer has spent a lot of money putting that team together. I don't understand why the coaching staff would be absolved from blame when the coach is very much responsible for how the team responds to adversity and how they handle week-to-week situations. And for 3 years now, they've just been a team that can't beat winning teams and can't win big games. So I would say if you're going to fire the GM, I would look at firing the head coach too and starting over, because I think this is a team that's probably reached its pinnacle and is not showing like it can do anything more than squeak into the playoffs and lose in the first round.
And Ben, a conversation we had about Tua. If Tua's in Cincinnati, could he put up the Joe Burrow numbers? If Tua's in KC, can he put up could he put up the Patrick Mahomes numbers? Is Tua transferable to any style of offense, or is it a Tua Mike McDaniel combination that makes pretty much, honestly, both of them? Does Tua need Mike? Does Mike need Tua?
I argue that Tua puts up better numbers in KC and Cincy, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Mike McDaniel is like the only person on the planet who could unlock Tua's potential. I think it's been a good system for them. It's been a good marriage, but it does feel like they're just in a weird place right now because of Tua's concussion history, where it seems like Mike McDaniel, instead of like building on the offense, they have to kind of limit what they want to do and throw a lot of quick passes because they're just trying to get the ball out of his hands so quickly. So I don't know, maybe that relationship now has kind of run its course. I mean, this is kind of a weird year with the injuries kind of messing things up and putting the Dolphins so far, behind the eight ball in the playoff race. So, maybe for once Stephen Ross just wants to take a breath and like let things chill and maybe hope for better luck next year. But at the same time, this is the third year now with Mike McDaniel and Tua where they look good, but can't do quite enough to get over the top and become a real winning team. And how long do you want to keep ramming your head against the wall and expecting different results? So I do think that some changes are probably going to be coming this offseason for the Dolphins. And this is probably the last run for this core. I don't know which guys are going to be moving on necessarily, but it does feel like some pieces of this core are going to be gone starting next year because this core just hasn't done enough to merit, bring it back and trying again.
It's kind of what Adam Beasley said to us yesterday and wrote in his column, which is, the roster seems like it has great potential and it, like you said, isn't becoming like a little, glitch every now and then. This seems to be who they are. They can't get past good teams. They can't beat playoff worthy teams. But if I told you before the season started, you had a team with Tua and Tyreek and Jalen Waddle and Jonnu Smith and Raheem Mostert. And on the other side of the ball, you had Jalen Ramsey and Javon Holland, Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, if they're not injured. Like, they have a roster stacked with talent.
So that goes to what I was saying before. I'm not sure why the answer is firing Chris Greer. I agree. I think they have talent there. It's just the coaching staff doesn't seem to be getting the most out of it. The talent isn't gelling together for whatever reason. And So I agree. I find it curious that the answer is to fire the GM. I'd be looking at the coach. You know, I want a coach that can lead his team into a cold weather situation and win a game. I mean, seriously, if I'm Stephen Ross, these upcoming games at the Jets and at the Browns, right? You got to, like, these would be crucial games for evaluating Mike McDaniels. Inferior opponents with nothing to play for. Let's see the Dolphins go into those cold weather, you know, situations and come away with wins. And if not, I think Stephen Ross should seriously consider making not only a change at GM, but I think more appropriately a change at head coach after this season.
But, Ben, take the Dolphins out of it. Just this context that I present to you. You go through a rebuild starting in 2018. You tank. You pick your quarterback. As a GM, I'm speaking. You pick the quarterback you want. You cycle through two different head coaches. And now, after 5 years or 6 years of that rebuild, you're further away from taking down the Buffalo Bills. Doesn't the person responsible for constructing that roster and finding the personnel have to answer for that?
Yeah, and I it is smart to pair the GM. If you're going to fire a GM or a head coach, it's much smarter to do both as opposed to one or the other, because you want everyone aligned on the same timeline. You don't want a GM coach, you know, building a roster for now, but the coach looking for long-term success or anything, you know, or the opposite. So it would be smarter to hold the GM accountable with the coach as well. At the same time, if you're not planning on blowing up the roster, if you're just hoping to retool it, because they did re-sign everyone, so they're locked into a lot of these guys, you know, maybe you let the GM try to dig his way out of it, and maybe you justify it by saying, we have the players. Hawk listed a bunch of very talented, well-compensated players. We just need the right coaching staff to get the most out of these guys. So I think it's very easy for Stephen Ross and the Dolphins to justify that the failures of the Dolphins are more because of the coaching staff than Chris Greer in the front office.
I mean, who's the golden goose of this? Because the Jets got an opening, Chicago got an opening, so there's going to be some coaches hired, is it? I heard Aaron Glenn. I'm hearing, you know, who was it, Ben Johnson from the Lions. Who's the golden goose of this coaching search?
I mean, it does seem like Ben Johnson from the Lions is kind of the young offensive coach that everyone wants to get a part of. We'll see about Aaron Glenn. There's a lot of defensive coaches and former players who kind of fill that bucket, so I'm not sure if he's going to get a job. And there might be fewer openings this year than usual. We know there's the Jets and the Bears, but you know, and the Saints, it feels like your boy Darren Rizzi, momentum is building there for him to keep that job. I think that'd be a terrific hire for the Saints. I love that he went for two at the end of the game, even though it didn't work for them the other day. That's coaching, you know, aggressively, and he's got backup quarterbacks, but the players are still playing hard and they're winning games. So maybe Rizzi gets the job there in New Orleans.
Yo, Ben Volen, you can read his work at the Boston Globe, Boston Globe app as well. Thank you for making time for us. Have a great holiday season. I'm imagining we won't talk to you till next year, and we'll see where things stand with the Dolphins and the Patriots when we do.
All right, boys. Thanks a lot.
It is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline Shop. Hundreds of Toyotas indoors, one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan.
All right, always fun on a Friday to talk to Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. And Mike, man, there's so much going on. By the way, I see the NFL just decided to really screw over college football tomorrow for their playoffs. We got two great games on Saturday, Texans at the Chiefs and Steelers at the Ravens. Could care less about college football.
Well, but, you know, this one's interesting to me because I saw a clip of Tony Kornheiser saying that college playing the postseason games up against NFL games is a finger in the eye to the NFL. First of all, nobody puts a finger in the eye to the NFL.
Correct.
Second of all, I don't believe, and I'm in the process of trying to nail this down, I don't believe that the NFL would have played this Saturday, but for the fact that they decided to play Christmas games on Wednesday, and they needed to take the four teams that would be playing on Christmas and move their game to Saturday for week 16. So they have 3 days in between off. So it's like Sunday to Thursday. This is Saturday to Wednesday. I don't think the NFL was going to have games tomorrow. I think it's only because they decided, after initially saying, no, we're not going to do it, to embrace playing games on Christmas this year on a Wednesday.
Well, they gave him two great games, I can tell you that. That's pretty damn good. That looks like the playoff. That looks like a month from now that you could see those teams playing each other. So it was worked out pretty well. Hey, so I'm watching the game. I had the sound down. I'm about half falling asleep. The fair catch, the free kick, fair catch interference, and a 57-yard field goal. Did you know right away? Did you know the ruling on that? Did you know?
Well, and here's why I knew, and this is kind of pathetic because it really dates me, but before the Madden game, the way that the NFL indoctrinated America's youth was through NFL films and through books published by the Punt, Pack, and Pass, and Kick Library that you would order in school, and they'd show up in a box, and, you know, you'd get your books, and they smelled great, and I've still got several of them. And I learned from one of those books, More Strange But True Football Stories, which meant there was an original Strange But True Football Stories that was so good, they did a sequel. And the last chapter of More Strange But True Football Stories tells the tale of a fair catch free kick from a 1968 game between the Bears and the Packers. Mac Percival kicked what was the game-winning field goal via a fair catch free kick. So I became aware of that when I was like 8 years old. And it's happened once since then, 1976, 45-yarder from Ray Wershing, then with the Chargers. And then last night, the 57-yarder. And they didn't make nearly as big of a deal about it as they should have. They never mentioned once it was the longest fair catch free kick in NFL history at 57 yards. The prior record was 52 by Paul Hornung in 1964. They didn't mention that 9 had been tried since Wershing and failed. They didn't mention that 15 of the last 16 had failed. They really could have leaned into it and had fun with it. And I was disappointed they didn't make a bigger deal out of it.
Yeah, and then I didn't know the guys were 10 yards back. I didn't remember that one either. So I was just going, thank God that I wasn't doing that broadcast and had to sit there like a big dummy with no idea what was going on and how it was all set up. So
it looked like the old kickoff.
Yeah,
the kickoff,
you're
the
right.
The kickoff formation we got rid of this year.
Hey, speaking of that, all right, we've been through 14 games. What's been your take, kickoff and kickoff return? Good enough to come back with, or let's make some adjustments, or let's blow it out?
The real question is whether or not they're going to move the touchback point from the 30 to the 35. The touchback rate is down, and I'm surprised that as many balls are being put in play as they are, but if you put the touchback at the 35, you're going to see a lot more kicks in play. The question is, what will they do about the onside kick? Will they finally embrace a 4th-and-20 type play where a team that's trailing by multiple scores has a chance to retain possession, a better chance than what we currently see with the onside kick? Because, look, this was 10, 11 years ago. Roger Goodell was on CNBC, and they asked him what team he roots for, and he says, I root for the team that's trailing. So they want to create opportunities for these games to stay exciting. You want the team that's losing to have a chance to get back into it. So I think they'll do something about the onside kick to make it a more viable opportunity for a team to get back into a game. But this formation's here to stay. It's safer because the impacts aren't as high speed and high power. And, once you get used to it, it's always reminded me of playing electric football when I was a kid. That was another way they indoctrinated us. Drive is crazy, setting up a play for 20 minutes, and then you click the button and they all run around in circles. But it looks like electric football where they're all frozen in place until, the ball lands in the hand of the returner. And I think we've all kind of gotten used to it. I haven't seen a lot of complaints about it. And there may be some tweaks, but I think this new lineup, this new approach is not going anywhere.
Mike, here in South Florida, some of our fans and some of our media members have had it with the Tyreek Hill social media and time for me to go coach. Some people are offended, especially since he's coming off. He didn't play very well. He and Tua together did not go well in that Texans game. What's been your take? He had to come back and explain the whole thing, like someday I want to coach and all that stuff. What'd you read into Tyreek Hill's social media post?
Well, look, we're all responsible for how we formulate our words. And when you say it's time to go coach, you're not saying it will be time for me to coach when I retire. You're not saying it is an era in which more and more current players should think about coaching when their careers are over. He said, it's time. It is time. Not it will be time. It's time for me to go coach. And, you know, is he frustrated this year? Why wouldn't he be?
Sure.
Is he aware of his football mortality? Why wouldn't he be? He's closer to the end than the beginning. He's having a rough year. He hasn't had a 30-yard reception since week one, for crying out loud. And, you know, he's stuck. He did this extension before the season. He's at the mercy of the Dolphins. I'm sure he would like to be playing relevant, consequential football games in December. And technically he still is, but not the kind that he thought he would be playing. He'd rather be jockeying for the one seed, not hoping to win and get a lot of help. And maybe there's a one, you know, in 100 shot at getting to the playoffs. But yeah, I thought we played his explanation today on PFT Live, and it's predictable. It's convenient. And ultimately it's not convincing to me. He was frustrated. He acted out in that moment.
Yep.
And, you know, it was a little glimpse into what he's thinking right now. And he's thinking, how much longer am I going to be playing football?
Well, I always wonder, too, these 3 years, and I know he's made a lot of money, and he's set. He's right. They're paying him a lot. They extended it for a lot of money. But I got to tell you, how much of this goes back to he's watching the Kansas City Chiefs and this run they're on, and he used to be on that team. Part of it's right. That good-looking girl, that it's got to bother him a little bit, doesn't it?
Hey, he called his shot, and they called his bluff. You know, and I think a lot of it had to do when we rewind to what happened in 2021. He was targeted more than he'd ever been targeted before in his career, and it wasn't enough. I think he saw what Cooper Kupp was doing that year, and he thought, man, if they would throw me the ball as much as Cooper Kupp's getting the ball, I'd set all the records. I'd be the Calvin Johnson of this generation. And it became clear in the aftermath of his departure that he was a pain in the ass behind the scenes to the Chiefs. And they finally just decided enough. We're not going to give him the contract he wants. We're not giving him the football as often as he wants it. If anything, he's keeping our offense from being what it can be because Patrick Mahomes is trying to force the ball to him because, you know, we don't want to hear this guy complaining that he didn't get the ball enough. And so they, you know, they ship him out. And they've only won every Super Bowl that's been played since they traded him. Now, I don't know if they're going to win this one, but going 2-for-2 in championships after you trade a guy who would have been regarded as one of the indispensable figures for the first championship you won, that really made the Chiefs look good, and it didn't make Tyreek look all that good, and he's been chasing that ever since. And, you know, he realizes now that it's a lot harder to have an elite team put together than he thought it was.
Last night I did a little radio back to San Francisco last night with their sports station out there. They're on this Brock Purdy thing. Some of the fan base and some of the media guys like, I don't know, it's a lot of money, between 50 and 60 million. You know, it's up, and he might play hardball with them, and you guys went through it. What was it? What's your take on Brock Purdy? They have to pay him, don't they?
Well, Brock Purdy's got one more year under contract, so they can kick the can through 2025 if they choose to do so. And the 49ers have been challenging for players to deal with. You know, they're not just going to hand a bunch of money over to him if they don't have to. And I keep saying, and this goes all the way back to Jared Goff's initial contract extension with the Rams in 2019. I was shouting from the rooftops, don't give him a market value contract, and they did. And 2 years later, they attached a first-round pick to his contract to get it off the books, for crying out loud. And look at the Tua situation. If we applied sodium pentothal to Stephen Ross right now or attached him to a lie detector test, would he say, man, I wish I hadn't given Tua that contract? Like, we see these deals get handed out. Who are they bidding against? You're bidding against yourself. You're putting this giant number out there that there's no guarantee the player is going to earn. And what have we seen from Tua in recent weeks? A guy that's getting paid $55 million who isn't playing like a guy who's getting paid $55 million. At a certain point, it's on you to justify that salary. And it's not a criticism. It's just a fact. So if I'm the 49ers, why am I going to throw a bunch of money at Brock Purdy? Why am I going to do that when I could go draft another guy and develop another guy who could maybe become another Brock Purdy or pay a veteran a hell of a lot less than top of the market for a guy who, you know, this is the year he was supposed to be dominant. That's what he said before the season. I want to be dominant this year. Well, they haven't been dominant.
No.
They've been middle of the pack at best. And yes, it has a lot to do with injuries, but great quarterbacks tend to overcome a team's injuries. Patrick Mahomes overcomes whatever happens in Kansas City. Tom Brady always overcame whatever happened in New England. And Brock Purdy has not overcome the adversity the 49ers have gone through this year.
Mike, we were talking about this earlier. Do you think teams in the NFL pay attention to what fans think? Do you think they get a feel for their market and what fans think?
I think it's foolish if you don't. And when I hear, you know, the old school football guys, and Andrew Berry made a comment like that this year in Cleveland as it relates to Browns fans not wanting Deshaun Watson to be the quarterback. You know, well, we love our fans, but we're not going to listen to our fans. Well, your fans are your customers. And at some point, you better listen to your fans. At some point, you better have some sensitivity to the outside noise, because those are the people who determine whether or not your stadium is full. Those are the people who determine whether or not your local TV ratings are as high as they can possibly be. Those are the people who have the attachment to the franchise. And if you aren't paying any attention to them, I think you're missing the point. Now, you can factor in their preferences and you can respectfully disagree, but to act like you're above listening to your customers, that's the pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered mindset that Mark Cuban articulated 11 years ago in his prediction of what's eventually going to happen in the NFL. And if owners start ignoring their fan bases, they're going to have problems.
Mike, just to follow up to that, the reason I bring that up partially is because Chris Greer, the noise is loud everywhere. Articles written to people going, this roster is not what it needs to do, and the moves we've made, and people we get rid of, and the people we keep. Fair or not with what Chris Greer's done?
Well, you know what matters? What matters is what Stephen Ross thinks at the end of the day. And he was the one who said right before the season started, this is a Super Bowl team. Now, he added the caveat, injuries can change everything. And, of course, the absence of Tua for four games was a factor. But since he's been back, it's not like they've slipped into this juggernaut status. They still struggle to beat good teams, struggle in cold weather. And at some point, you have to wonder what Stephen Ross is going to do about it. So would it surprise me if he moves on from Chris Greer, especially because so far it looks like they gave Tua Tagovailoa way too much money. And I'm assuming Chris Greer was one of the people saying we should give him this contract. We should give in to his demands. We shouldn't play hardball with him. The other question I have, Joe, and I've been raising this as it relates to the Bears, but this applies to other teams as well. When you're looking for a coach, the traditional avenues are hire a coordinator who's never been a coach before and hope that he can figure out how to coach. Hire a fired former NFL head coach who's available to anyone that wants to hire him, or hire a college coach. And not enough teams consider the option of calling another team that currently has a head coach and saying, hey, you know, is there any chance you'd like to make a change, but you don't want to fire your guy, but maybe you don't want to trade your guy, and, you know, maybe the thing's coming toward an end. And I wonder if the Bears would call Stephen Ross about Mike McDaniel, what Stephen Ross would say about whether or not he'd be willing to let the Bears try to hire Mike McDaniel if the Bears were offering draft pick compensation, because he got an extension before the season too, and I wonder whether or not Stephen Ross regrets that one.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It really is. Hey, I leave you with this one too. How about this Aaron Rodgers, Ryan Clark, and now it's gotten to the vaccinations. I'm just curious wherever the hell that came from with Aaron Rodgers.
Well,
go ahead.
Joe, I've been following this for 3 years. From the moment that Aaron Rodgers lied to everybody about being vaccinated, and it wasn't an affirmative lie, it was a word game. He said, yeah, I've been immunized, and they didn't ask a follow-up. And his attitude is, well, you didn't ask a follow-up, and I would have said I wasn't vaccinated. I've got some homeopathic thing. But regardless, he's got this idea that anyone who criticizes him is potentially bought and paid for by Big Pharma, which means that he says nothing that is susceptible to fair criticism. Nothing he says or does could be reasonably criticized by anybody who wasn't corrupted by Big Pharma. That's his attitude, and he said it multiple times, and it's delusional. I mean, I criticize him all the time. I'm still waiting for my Big Pharma check. You want to pay me for saying what I believe anyway? I'll take it, and I'm being facetious here. But this persecution complex, I mean, there's a lot of weird things going on with Aaron Rodgers, and he has said a couple of times in recent appearances on the Pat McAfee show, when he retires, he's going to disappear and we're never going to hear from him again. I can only hope that he's telling the truth when he says that. I have a feeling he isn't, but I can only hope he is.
He's going back to Oroville, California, work on some relationships with his family. Mike, thank you, and have a great holiday, bud. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe. See you, buddy.
You know what happens is, you know, you win 11 in a row, you know, and you lose, and then the sky falls. And I hate to say it, but we're not going to be able to win 11 in a row again for the rest of this season. You know, what happens is you get used to eating filet, and I'm talking to all of us, and well, everything's good. Life's good, you know, and but you forgot what it was like when you had nothing and you ate your molded bread. Sometimes you got to get punched in the mouth and remember what it used to be like to really appreciate where you are. And we'll do that. And so we got a bad taste in our mouth. We got kicked around the other day. We lost a few guys. And you know what? It's exactly what we needed. This is exactly what we needed. So we're going to bounce back. We're going to respond. We got guys that are about to have an unbelievable opportunity here. And we will play the game any way needed to win. We still got a good offense. We got plenty of defensive players. I can go rattle them off right now. We're going to put the best 11 on the field. We're going to freaking cut it loose. We're going to play with our special teams. And I don't give a crap if we got to win by 1 point for the rest of the year. That's what we're going to do. And I'm going to be happy about it. We come out of the game with 50 yards of total offense and we win by one, you're going to see smiles on my face, I promise you. All right? If it's the other way defensively, we give up 700 yards and we win by 1 point, you're going to see a smile from my ear to ear. All right? I can promise you. So we're going to find a way and we're going to get it done.
That was Lions head coach Dan Campbell. It is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop hundreds of Toyotas indoors in one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood. And Joe, we are joined by Odyssey NFL insider Brian Balding, a host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious.
Woody, that's a lot of stuff right there you just hit, man. Even getting that mayonnaise in there. Baldy, good morning. How you doing, bud?
Good morning, Joe. How are you, buddy?
How about Dan Campbell, man? How about Dan Campbell?
He gets my attention just listening to that, Joe. I heard that earlier in his press conference, but players need to hear that kind of stuff, man. They respond to that guy. It's just so genuine. And I don't know. I guess people think, you know, pro athletes are pros and make a lot of money. Everybody needs to be motivated in this world, Joe, and that's what he does.
You know, it's like, hey, I lost five more players. You know what? Maybe it was good because I got five more guys ready to play, and we're going to friggin' no excuses. We're going to win. Probably going to have to, you know, outscore people from everything they've lost on the defensive side. Anyway, we got a lot of stuff to get to, but you wouldn't be surprised if I told you the Bills ended up playing Philadelphia in a Super Bowl, would you?
Not at all. I mean, you know, it's mid-December, but, you know, those are the two best teams right now in football. The Buffalo Bills, I mean, I know they lost to the Rams the week before, but they scored 42 points. Their offense seems unstoppable. It's kind of rare, Joe, but I know that team pretty good. I'm real good friends with the offensive line coach. They've actually started all five starters on the offensive line all 14 games, Joe.
That's unbelievable. You know, that doesn't happen. Not here.
You're seeing three right tackles in Miami, three left tackles. Like, you're seeing all this stuff. They've signed up their same five starters all 14 games. And generally, and they're good players. So, you know, that's kind of where it all starts, you know, is the offensive line. And then, of course, you got the quarterback who's just a beast. But, you know, they've won the division for the fifth straight year in a row. They own the division. They got the best player in the league. Their offensive line lines up every week. No, it wouldn't surprise me if it was Buffalo and Philly right now.
Hey, so Baldy, I just get you caught up because you don't live here down here in South Florida full time. You're down here some. People are pissed off, man. They're mad at everybody. You write an article and it's not negative enough about the team. Huh. Our fan base is pissed. Another loss to a good team on the road when you got a chance to get back to 500 again, and you get your butt kicked. What do you see? I get it at this point. You can't say, well, the team's just, it is what it is. It's an average team. What do you do?
Well, I mean, Joe, look, Houston had, I think they had 170 yards of offense. Like, the defense is playing their butts off and have for the most part. But, you know, you have nine possessions. You turn over four times. You know, the interceptions killed them. They had that drive going. You know, Stingley takes the ball away. I mean, is Tyreek Hill... Is he Tyreek Hill, Joe? I mean, he didn't look like he was fighting for that ball from Stingley to me. Like, there was a time there was nobody in the league that was coming down with that football except for Tyreek. And I don't see the same fire from him. And let's face it, they haven't been able to run the ball all year. And so now you're just relying on Tua, you know, to win these games. And last week, you know, I mean, Houston had their way with them.
You know what? I'm glad you said that because we've been talking. I thought he lost a little bit of his speed. Not a lot, but he doesn't. I don't think he runs like the guy saw last year. Of course, he hasn't had a chance to run down the field and stuff. But, yeah, there's a little something missing with him. I don't think the timing's great, as good as it was before, and they were on the same page, as good a 1-2 punch as there was to a throw to Tyreek. They don't look like they're on the same page. I don't know if he's freelancing his routes a little bit, but they don't seem to be on the same page, to your point.
No, I mean, there was a time when they just run him across the formation and he'd just have a choice to just keep running, you know, or to stop or to curl in. I mean, it looked like it was like a freelance type play with him. And they were doing that for a couple of years in a row. And for whatever reason, after Tua came back this year, after the concussion, I know he caught a bunch of balls against the Jets, but it seemed like it was all underneath stuff against him. I don't see the deep shots that he would just torch teams with the last couple of seasons.
Baldy, one thing you've been talking about, and the reason I bring all this up, bring it back to the offensive line, you brought up all the guys that are hurt, and now Kendall Lamb's hurt, and Teron Armstead is may or may not be back this week. He's obviously hurting at this point. We got to invest in some offensive linemen. We got to draft our own horses, don't we? Isn't that the best way to take care of this? We just can't put money on everything.
No, you can't. And you just look at Buffalo. You know, they did trade out their center in free agency for Connor McGovern. And, you know, David Edwards was there to be taken by anybody. But Aaron Cromer, the offensive line coach, coached him with the Rams. Deion Dawkins, they drafted. You know, Osiris Torrance, they drafted. Spencer Brown, they drafted. They drafted their two tight ends. I mean, they built two. You got to draft and develop, Joe. First of all, it's the only way to really manage your cap. But at that position, you have to draft and develop. The Eagles have done the exact same thing, draft and develop all their players. And so at some point, that's what you got to do. You got to be committed to it. You got to coach them up. You know, you got to find them. They don't have to be first-rounders, you know, but you've got to be able to draft. Green Bay Packers have drafted.
There you go. Same guys. That's right.
And none of them are first-rounders, Joe.
Yeah. It's amazing, and I know everybody's plenty frustrated around here about everything with, you know, high expectations on things, and here you go with what you're getting. And by the way, we don't even look fast. We got all these fast guys. The only thing I saw was Achane run down a guy that was going to score on a pick six, and he ran him down. I said that's our best offensive play.
Yeah. Well, look. The running game is non-existent. They don't move the line of scrimmage. You can have some gimmick plays, you know, in there every once in a while, but it starts with the foundation. What's your foundation plays? What's your three plays you can run against any defense, against any team? I don't care how high they're ranked on run defense. Like, you know, that's what Tampa Bay's doing. They run the same plays over and over. They're running the ball really good. And for years, they couldn't run the ball at all. And they just made a commitment to it. With the offense coordinator, the commitment to the run, drafting players at center in different positions, and here they are. Like, they're going to win the NFC South.
Hey, so let's get into wrestling, and thanks for staying with me on some stuff here in South Florida. But Michael Penix finally going to take over. What do you do? We were talking about this morning. Kirk Cousins not having a good year. They're not just going to dump him. They owe him a zillion friggin' dollars. They wouldn't move on from him, would they?
Yeah, they would. Because I don't know what they have to do that, Joe. But honestly, he's a declining player. I mean, it just happens. I mean, he can't move at all. You know, he has not. This is not a slump. This is this is what we're watching, a declining player. I saw him 2 weeks ago in Minnesota, and he didn't look anything like he used to when he was in Minnesota. Now, the offense is weird. They're in a shotgun offense. Like, he's never under center. It's never play action. But I said weeks ago, Joe, that if the Atlanta Falcons want to win the NFC South, they have to change quarterbacks. I've been watching these clips of Michael Penix from practice that his agent sends me, and I'm like, you're going to see a difference. Like, all of a sudden, the ball's going to go down the field. This kid, and he's an elite athlete. He can run. when he has to get away from players. They have a great running game. I think he's a perfect complement in that team right now.
Odyssey NFL Insider Brian Baldinger here with us on QAM. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season.
Hey, Baldy, the other one is there's no way they let Sam Darnold. I know they got another quarterback they drafted in the first round as well that got injured, but they can't come back. I mean, Sam Darnold's got to be their guy. They're not looking to trade him, are they? Moving on?
Well, I did talk to the general manager a couple of weeks ago up there, and he's a very bright guy. And, you know, I asked him a similar question, Joe. And he said, look, we don't have to make any decision. Let's just play it out. You know, he's on a one-year deal. Let's see how he does, you know, finishing the season. They got a nice, shiny 12-2 record. They play Detroit next week, you know, for all the marbles. Let's see how he does in the playoffs. You know, and if he doesn't perform at the highest level the way we think he can, and what we have around them, you know, we can make that decision. But, I mean, if they don't make a huge offer to him, Joe, there's five other teams waiting right now that will, including maybe San Francisco. Who knows? Like, you know, would you take Purdy or would you take Sam Darnold going forward?
I take Purdy. It's Sam Darnold. I take Sam Darnold, what I've seen and what is going on with Purdy, with the team not being obviously as good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I said similar things in San Francisco yesterday. People want to throw me off the Golden Gate Bridge. But, you know, I mean, you know, the guy, Sam's been healthy for the last 3 years, and he's a much bigger player. You know, he's probably every bit, if not a better athlete. He looks like the guy that was the third pick in the draft right now.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of San Francisco, you ever seen that Devondre Campbell thing where a guy refused to go in a game?
You know, here's the thing. Here's the backstory, Joe, to this story. Is, you know, we saw Dre Greenlaw pull, you know, tear his Achilles in the Super Bowl game, and we all felt horrible for the kid. He's a great player. Him and Fred Warner, probably the best handed linebackers in the league. He made his debut after 10 months of coming back from an Achilles surgery. We all know, I mean, you know Dan Marino, like he came back from his, but like we all know guys had to come back from that injury. It's torturous watching guys. Not unknowing if they're ever going to come back and be the same. Dre Greenlaw made his debut coming back on the field after 10 months of that. And Devondre filled in for him. Fine. Well, you know, Dre goes out of the game with something and it's time for you to go in, Devondre. Play your role. And he's like, I'm not going in. Like that, the whole thing made me sick to my stomach.
Yeah, well, I was glad they just suspended him and didn't cut him because somebody would have picked him up because they needed help. So I kind of like their move, but I was glad to see some players. Usually, you know, players kind of go along with the company line of the players. And no, those guys went, no, man, he's got to go, man. And they were leading the game when he went out. I was like, no, hell no.
Yeah, no, that's the code, Joe. You know, we're a fraternity, we a brotherhood. We talk about these words all the time. And part of that is a commitment to the team above and beyond anything individually. And the commitment of the team is, no, you go in. We got to win this game. We have a chance for the playoffs. Like, whatever. Even if you didn't have a chance for the playoffs, your turn to go in. You go play. Nah, go to the locker room and pack your bags and get out of here.
Yeah, no, well, we saw it. Hey, I got to ask you finally. Aaron Rodgers has played, and by the way, played great against the Dolphins, made some really good throws and stuff. Looked like played well again. How about this Rodgers stuff between the documentary and going on this show at ESPN? And he just, it's incredible. Like for the guy that's talking about team and let's keep everything in locker room, man, I don't know. Is there a chance he says stuff and he doesn't realize there's no sympathy and people just think he's an idiot? Is there a chance of that? What am I missing when you see it?
No, he's taking names for everybody that's like counting them out and all that kind of stuff. You know, like he's charting all the stuff up if you listen to his performance to Pat McAfee yesterday. So I don't know. You know, I mean, he led their team in rushing last week with scrambles. He threw the ball for 200 yards to Devontae Adams in the second half of the game to finally win a game. But you know, there's going to be a whole new regime in New York, and you know, I can't believe that a new GM, a new coach, a new system, you know, all that stuff, like they're going to bring him back. Like, they got to, like, build this thing the right way if they want to go compete with Buffalo and anybody else in this league right now.
Hey, just a follow-up to that, why I asked you about him. Could you see him starting for somebody else? Is there somebody else who goes, I get Aaron Rodgers, and let's take a chance and bring him in to start for us.
I don't know, Joe. Like, he's going to be 42 next year. He's not going to find the fountain of youth. And, I mean, the injuries are going to follow him. He was banged up a lot this year. It really affected his performance. Sometimes it's just time to write. Sometimes you have to get yourself – the other people have to get you out of your own way and get you off into the sunset. He said there's no chance they'll ever see him ever when he retires in the media, ever. So maybe it's just time to write off in the sunset and do whatever's next in his life, I think.
Yeah, man, go spend a little time and figure out mom and dad and spend a little time with them or something.
Yeah.
And his brothers. Go see the whole group there up there in Oroville, California, man. Baldy, thank you, brother. Really appreciate it, man. Have a good week.
Okay, Joe, you bet. I'll talk to you next week, man. Happy holidays to you.
Right back at
you.
Thanks. Yep. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate that. Brian Balding, Odyssey NFL Insider.
All right, he's also the host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious.
Hey, got to tell you about the main man. Oh, boy, the main man. They're going, wait a sec. Everybody says main man. No. I know everybody uses that, the main man. Hey, here comes my main man. Well, that means Anthony Caliendo's on his way, because that's what it means to me at the Business Broker Experts. He is the number one business broker in the state of Florida, ready to help you sell your business. You got a lot of buyers, I saw the book. You know, when he sat in here and we were all talking, he goes, look at this. Look at people. They go, hey, if you see something like this, I'd be really interested in buying it. Some things big, some small, some specialized, doesn't matter. The main man, Anthony Caliendo, is looking for buyers just like, or looking for businesses just like yours. And if you're getting to that point where you're ready to go ahead and sell it, call him. Let him take care of it for you. Call 1-800-THE-MAIN-MAN and speak to Anthony Caliendo so he can flip your biz and cash you out in a big way. Now, the other thing is really important. Most business owners don't have any idea what their business is worth. The main man offers a free, no-obligation business valuation worth $2,500. Call him and find out today. Let him match somebody up with your business to sell it and get a lot of money and be happy. Call 1-800-THE-MAIN-MAN or online to themainman.com. You will deal directly with Anthony Caliendo, big personality, big knowledge of how to sell your business.
Welcome back, everybody. Tobin and Leroy here with you, 560 WQM. Leroy,
yes.
What were you pestering me about during the break, dude?
During the break, we got a call from Secaucus.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
And they threw a flag.
Okay.
So we're going to have to call it. Going to have to call it on you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure.
Go ahead, Frog Boy.
Let's go ahead and review the footage right now.
Yes, we're going to show the replay
to us right now. Here's the replay.
Like, you know, I got it in the middle of the season, but what I gather is they go on a date. They all see who they like. They all go on. Like,
oh, no. You what? What? Wow. That's a good whistle.
Yeah, there was no gathering. And I wasn't trying to do my annoying scenario.
Yeah, no.
Like, you know, I got it in the middle of the season, but what I gather is they go on a date. They all see who they like. They all go
wait,
on. Like,
he's like, wait, no. So he
said, I didn't even hear him
wait,
say what.
He said what? And you thought he was talking about
I thought you were talking about the show.
That's why you kept going.
I apologize.
But that's because he didn't go, Mm-mm. We just gonna let him get away with that. But then, more importantly,
yes,
Jennifer,
two fouls on the play.
Jennifer
mm-hmm.
just made me aware of a Tyreek Hill tweet.
Yeah,
that you seem to.
You were
have.
Tagged on it,
huh?
You were tagged on it.
That he said,
if you ever open Twitter.
He tweets every day, Tobin.
He doesn't tweet every day, actually. Though he actually hasn't been tweeting that much, which is kind of what went to my whole point of this.
He's got you right where
that's always his out, though.
Oh,
like, he's the friend of the show.
But like that. But do you understand? Like that's when you play in the playpen that he does. Like that's always. Oh, it was just trolling. Me. Like, you could always do that.
So you don't think he was serious?
Why were you so pressed yesterday?
I'll tell you, JVig, because he had the worst game of his season. The Dolphins are out of the playoffs. The fan base is pissed, and he's kind of doing a little thing like, maybe I'll leave, which I get it. Trolls troll. But when your fan base is pressed up, like, that goes to my point of, dude, all right, but that's not the time and place I would do this. Not this week. And you guys are saying trolls are going to troll. I get your point. I really don't want, but my whole thing is you should have a little bit. This is not the week to do that. You do it in the middle of the off season, fine. But like Leroy, but that performance they just put up, that's stinker.
That's my whole point. I can't disagree with it, but the only thing is when it happened, I laughed and I'm like, still trolling.
The cheetah's gonna, like you said, cheetahs don't change their spots. But
you probably should change your spots for a week or put his spots on hold.
But that's the definition of a troll. Yes. They're going to do it right when you're at your lowest. They're right. going to get you.
Right.
No.
Which is why this is the definition of insanity too. Because
wait. See, like when you guys, but JPEG, when you
time, can, it's not gonna
Jimmy,
happen.
Jimmy trolls,
but Jimmy's not doing it at the lowest moment. And like Jimmy's going out there. He puts the Suns colors on. First of all, it's two things. One, he's not saying things like, I want to leave. What he's doing there is he's making fun of the reports. Like, he's right. like, this. His agent had a tirade on Twitter the day beforehand. You're going to have fun with that.
Semantics.
You know? And it's also a fake conspiracy theory made up by a Twitter account named Emo Jimmy. Like,
great name.
That's legitimately, like, that's funny. When you are saying, like, time for me to go... And like it's either you could either be a rat and be like, oh, I was just saying time for me to go coach, like literally, because there's no comma there, even though I don't know if like he's the best with punctuation, but everybody's taking what?
No one uses proper punctuation
on Twitter. That's why nobody thought he legitimately wanted to go coach. That's why everybody thought it saying it's time for me to go coach. You know?
Oh, so T&P. It could also be that you're reading it wrong.
Well, it would be that. It's except the way he reacted saying, got y'all. I don't think I did read it wrong. I think he got the reaction he wanted, which is fine.
Which is perfect.
He got his impression numbers up. Wish he would get his receiving numbers up, but good for him. A lot of people read your tweet, dude.
And wait, numbers can I just up. Say, that's great. Here's the greatest thing about this man. My friend,
your friend.
During the holidays, right?
Mm-hmm.
He will go scorched earth on a human being rather than say he was wrong. So this whole situation.
I'm not wrong, though.
Wait. This whole
My opinion
situation.
Doesn't change.
This whole situation and the way he handled it mm-hmm. before now he's attacking Tyreek.
Went from 2,000 yards to 2,000 retweets. Congratulations.
See? There you go.
I want you to be clipping this.
No, seriously, though. Oh, no. Oh, great. It's like we got our priorities in line. That's great.
Wait, but can I? Here. I'll say the same thing that, like, you think these guys aren't trying to win? You think they don't want to win? But I would say to you this, that after the game is over,
mm-hmm.
right, move on. Like, what can you do at that point? It's not that you didn't try.
Okay.
Maybe you didn't play your best game, but it's not that you wanted to suck.
Totally fine. But is that if you tweet something like that, even if you're just joking,
yeah,
like is the time to tweet that when you should just be moving on? Or should we go in the pool of maybe it's time for me to go? Like even if it's a joke, like is that the time?
Here's the great thing about the internet and social media. Everybody reacted to the words.
Mm-hmm.
Without even having any idea what, maybe he was responding to something that somebody said or the way people were talking, and he said, you know what, time for me to go coach. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was just saying that just to troll the people that say he's lost a step or maybe. Whatever. Right? You have no idea. But for people to react and then tell me what he meant, it's even more laughable.
I don't care.
That's
really
the true act
about.
Of a troll, right there.
Great.
He's got you talking about something he didn't even mean.
Great. Good for him.
So what if he was
I'm
just
happy
saying?
For him. I'm happy.
What if he was saying everybody was trashing him? Everybody was saying all this stuff, and he goes, "Time for me to go, coach." As it may, you guys think I'm not good enough anymore. I might as well just go coach.
Then buck up, dude. Being a pouty pants about it. You're supposed
to be a pouty pants.
Oh, you're soaking in your woes because all of a sudden you're supposed to be the cheetah.
What the
fastest
hell?
Man alive, number one player in the NFL. Oh,
wait,
what is it, dude?
What the hell is wrong with you?
Get over it already. You're supposed
kinda
to be
like
out
you
there.
Did?
Hey, you guys are the one who brought it up. I wasn't going to bring it up again.
It's always
TMP. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
What are you doing over there? I don't like that he's touching buttons over there.
Because
there's someone in the room.
Oh no, there's go.
I'm not just randomly just touching buttons and stuff. I'm attempting to contact Cheetah to see if he's still listening and could potentially call in to refute your statements against him. What are my statements against him?
You think
more worried about impressions than yards?
You think that just because he put out a little tweety tweet that is normal, Tyreek? Normally you'd be like, oh, this is so funny, Tyreek. I love him.
Yes,
but it wasn't funny.
Now it's time and place.
Yeah. 25 years of no winning playoff games. You should know when to make your jokey jokes.
Well, I guess we know what time we're starting meetings next year.
Yeah, right? I guess we do.
This should be pretty good.
Can't wait.
I guess we do. Yeah, I kind of do wish he did have a better season before he's out here running. I mean, from the beginning, remember the whole arrest situation? I know that wasn't his fault necessarily, but it's kind of like it's been a lot of off the field, not a lot of on the field.
Yeah,
and I'm not even like I don't think Cheetah's washed. I'm not one of these people who thinks that he's lost a step. Obviously, I know that he's playing hurt, but I think as a leader, a star of the team, your fan base is a little on edge right now. I wouldn't tweet that. That would just be me. But he's the Cheetah. Sometimes, he's going to do the Cheetah things.
Sometimes you ever had a situation and it's so bad and like you just laugh. And yeah. It's like,
but sometimes it goes over like a fart in church.
As long as nobody knows who did it.
Take a break back after this.
Matt, thanks for taking the time, my friend.
My man, nice to be with you. How are you, dude?
Fantastic. All right, so let's get into this. Obviously, for both teams, not how they expected 2024 to go. So I know this is a pretty general question and pretty open-ended, but what do you make of this Niners season? And it really all started with the Ayuk drama before the season even began.
That's where I was going to take you first. You have to go to the very beginning. You have to go to the offseason into training camp where all of a sudden Christian McCaffrey needed a new contract, Trent Williams, Holtz out, Holtz in. It felt like the vibes were off from the jump, and that lasted right up until that final preseason game. You're going into the regular season, finally they get the Ayuk thing handled, but you're not going to have a successful season when one of the captains of your team was out that long. And then we get to week one, and wait a minute, Christian McCaffrey's not going to play, and we find out like an hour before the game begins. So it just felt like one bad thing after the next, you know, and in that I don't even mention Ricky Pearsall gets shot. They lose a couple of other players throughout this season to major injuries. Dre Greenlaw didn't start. Talanoa Hufanga goes down really early. Fred Warner's had a broken ankle since week three. If it's been able to go wrong, it's gone wrong for the 49ers.
You mentioned the word vibes, and we are on the same page because my next question has to do with vibes. It seems like if they were low at the beginning, they're even lower and as low as they can be right now, given all the Devondre Campbell drama and everything and the fallout from that. I want to get to that in a moment, but I saw a stat today or a number today that gives them literally a 0.1 chance of making the postseason. Given that, given just the general vibe around the team, are they checked out of these final three games? Like, will Shanahan have them ready to play football these final three, or are they pretty checked out and ready for the season to be over?
It's funny. I left the locker room just about an hour ago, and Fred Warner joked about the percentage chance of where they are in the playoffs. And I mean, these guys get it. There's no postseason coming their way this year. But Fred Warner was adamant, as he has many weeks, that pride is going to be on the line over the next 3 weeks. And he made the point that you are what you put on tape in the National Football League. And the second that you go out there without full intentions of playing at a high level, that's who you are. And that's how other teams see you. And for a guy that's going to be around this franchise for the foreseeable future, I don't think Fred Warner is going to allow this team to just, you know, crap on the season and say, hey, let's just think about golf in a couple of weeks. I do think that they're going to be ready to play. Do I think that means a whole lot right now? No. They don't have one good win on their schedule. I thought they were going to be ready to play last week, and they put up 6 points, and they punted as many times as they scored. So, to play, it's not going to do a whole lot.
Let's talk about Devondre Campbell for a second. What can you tell us that maybe you've learned this week that maybe the general public, especially down here, might not know about that situation? For those who haven't been following, Devondre Campbell was the starting linebacker for the majority of the season for the Niners. Dre Greenlaw came back from his Achilles injury last week, and that bumped Devondre Campbell down on the depth chart, understandably so. Dre Greenlaw has been a great player for San Francisco during this run they've had, and Devondre Campbell refused to go in the game. John Lynch came down from the press box and at halftime or the third quarter and told him, if you're not going to go in, then go to the locker room. Devondre Campbell did that, and then they suspended him for 3 games, basically the rest of the season. What don't we know about that situation? Because he has rightfully gotten torched from all areas involved with the National Football League, including his team, since that incident.
Yeah, I mean, Diamador Lenore literally called him a cancer to the team earlier this week. I think if there's one thing that the general public hasn't taken into full account is that Devondre Campbell wasn't necessarily a star player. He had played really poorly throughout this season. And a lot of people wrote about how Kyle Shanahan should have probably benched him weeks ago. Dee Winters, who was another backup linebacker on this team, probably should have been playing over Devondre Campbell a while ago. So not having him on the field isn't that big of a deal. The fact that he's no longer with the 49ers is not really a big deal. The bigger issue was the fact that he quit, literally, in the middle of a game and probably ruined and ended his NFL career. And when you think of Devondre Campbell in 10 years, you're going to think of this moment and not the all-pro season that he had in Green Bay or anything like that. But the all-pro player that he was a couple of years ago is certainly not who he was this season. And I think that's probably the biggest takeaway. I would say one thing that intrigued me was Nick Bosa alluded to the fact that he actually saw hints of this before the game on Thursday. I guess Campbell was outwardly upset upon finding out that he wasn't going to start, which I don't know in what world he thought he was going to start, but that took him by surprise, and he was pretty vocal about it before the game, and Bosa said, I don't want to cause more of a distraction, so he didn't mention anything to him at the time. But I thought, man, maybe Nick Bosa could have stopped this. But I almost view it as a positive now, to be entirely honest with you. If anything, it has brought the locker room and the team together. And when you talked about vibes, there's probably been a better vibe around this team since this has happened because they're united on at least something.
You know what's so interesting about the situation to me is, like, the guy refuses to go in because he was benched. And then you look at some of what the other guys on that team have had to deal with. You brought up Ricky Pearsall literally getting shot before the season. He's back playing. I believe one of the other players on defense unfortunately lost a child recently or before the season, something like that. Trent Williams has been doing everything he can to get on the field.
And then Trent Williams just had a stillborn. Yep.
So all these things, and because he gets benched, he refuses to go in. It's understandable just on the front end why guys would be upset. But when you examine what all the other guys have gone through to be able to get back on the field, it makes it even more glaring of an issue. And it's not surprising that they've reacted that way. And I think it's a little different. People have compared it to when LeGarrette Blount was released for refusing to go in a game and then getting signed by New England and being productive for the Patriots. I think this is obviously a bit of a different situation than that. I'm with you. I think Devondre Campbell's probably not going to get a real shot again to play in this league.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he pretty much ended his NFL career on Thursday night. And when you hear that John Lynch literally comes down from his box, John Lynch is an influential guy in the National Football League. I think he is bound to put a call out to 31 other NFL GMs about Devondre Campbell before anybody gives him another contract.
Yeah, I can't see it either. What I can see, and Matt Lively from CBS News Bay Area covers the 49ers. He's joining us right now on WQAM. What I can see and what is being talked about, and it feels like another interesting conversation like we had down here when it was time to extend Tua Tagovailoa. Brock Purdy's due an extension. What do you envision that extension looking like, and what do you think he deserves?
That is the debate of the century here in San Francisco. Does Brock Purdy get paid? Do they make him play one more year before actually giving him a deal? I think Brock Purdy ultimately gets extended this offseason. I think Kyle Shanahan sees so much potential in him. You saw what he did a season ago and carrying them to the Super Bowl. And this year, there have been so many factors as to why the 49ers have not been successful. And when I think of the top three things, they're not Brock Purdy. You know, he's not really to blame for all these issues. And, you know, the notion that Kirk Cousins or Sam Darnold would be better for the 49ers than Brock Purdy is outlandish to me. So I think Purdy gets the extension. Does he reset the quarterback market? I think that's a bit much. But I see a 4 or 5 year deal. And, you know, if it's a 4 year deal, I think it's right around $220 million. That's the going rate for a quarterback right now. And I don't think he's going to get as much as some of the other guys did this past offseason. You know, based on where he was drafted, and people still take that into account. But I do think Brock Purdy gets a huge chunk of money to remain with the 49ers.
I wonder how similar it looks to what Tua ended up getting, because I feel like the criticisms that both face, now obviously Brock has done a lot more in the postseason and in big games, obviously reaching the Super Bowl last year, but generally speaking, I feel like both of them have similar critiques that they get. So I wonder if those contracts will end up being similar.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And I think one of the biggest critiques that Brock gets is, well, he's a system quarterback, and Kyle Shanahan can do this with anyone. And I kind of think of the most successful quarterbacks around the league and of the last couple years, and aren't those guys system quarterbacks?
You know, yeah, it's, they have it's a great the dumbest talking in place? Point. Like, it's brutal. It's brutal.
It's that's how it should be here, especially.
It should be.
So, but yeah, I mean, the long story short is I think he gets extended.
One of his biggest weapons in the absence of Brandon Ayuk this year, and obviously George Kittle's been the George Kittle we know. Juwan Jennings had somewhat of a breakout year, but Deebo Samuel has been a shell of himself. And I know he was dealing with pneumonia of late, but to see that he's averaging like 50 yards from scrimmage per game this year, he's not getting in the end zone. What the hell's going on there?
No one knows. I mean, I think if somebody could figure it out, they'd get paid a lot of money right now, because that has been one of the biggest issues for the Niners and their offense, and not being able to sustain drives and not being able to rely on Deebo to have that huge burst. I mean, when you look at the tape last year and a lot of those games, you can count up a couple of Deebo Samuel plays that go 30, 40 yards where he's bouncing off defenders. Not the case this year. And I don't know if the rest of the league is caught up to this 49ers scheme. And when they see Deebo in a certain spot, they know, okay, this is going to be a Deebo play, and they're ready for it. Or if it's something on his personal side, I think when you take Christian McCaffrey off the field, it limits what he can do. I think when you then take Brandon Ayuk off the field, it really limits what he's able to do. So I think the absence of those two guys has been most impactful. And it's certainly thrown Deebo's future into some murky water here, more so than any other player on the current roster that's still under contract next season. I do think if the Niners are to make a move, are to get rid of somebody as a salary shed or make a trade, it probably does involve Deebo Samuel next time.
I feel like we're just doing a different version of what the conversation around Tyreek Hill has been like the last couple of weeks, because the talk down here is maybe that's a guy the Dolphins kick the tires on of potentially moving this offseason. One note on Deebo really quick. You mentioned the lack of big plays. He's got just one run this season that's gone for more than 10 yards. So whatever's happening there, the mystery continues. The way you've been talking about Kyle Shanahan throughout this, and obviously no sane person would think his job is in jeopardy, but I did see a discussion on one of the talking head shows on ESPN this week about another team trying to poach him from San Francisco. It doesn't seem like there's any kind of tension between Shanahan and John Lynch and other leadership with the 49ers. Is there any worry around there that he might leave for another job?
Sure. truly zilch. He was asked about it again today, and he said, you know, people around me who know me and trust me, they know that's not even a thought in my head. He said a couple weeks ago, you'd have to drag him out of the 49ers facility. And people have to remember, he picked John Lynch. You know, it was Shanahan who said, I want Lynch as my partner. And these two guys, by the way, just got extensions this past offseason. So I don't understand the notion that they're better without him. This is the guy that's taken them to a couple of Super Bowls, to four NFC championship games. And yes, of late, the Niners have been one of the best teams in the NFL over the last decade plus, when you think of the Harbaugh years as well. But 49ers fans seem very quick to forget about the years leading up to Jim Harbaugh and how down this franchise was after the Joe Montana and the Steve Young and the Jeff Garcia years. I mean, this was a starved franchise, and Kyle Shanahan has made them one of the most consistent, stable teams outside of 2020, in a year where they weren't allowed to play in their home stadium. This has been one of the best teams in the NFL. Inherited one of the worst rosters that's ever been constructed by Trent Baalke, and made it what it is today with all pro after all pro. So this idea that they're better off without him, or, you know, let's go after Ben Johnson, how much different does that look? I just don't understand right. it. I mean, yeah, if I'm the Chicago Bears, I am calling for a take, but I don't see San Francisco parting ways with an uber successful head coach, because they just don't grow on trees.
Yeah, I found the whole conversation even coming up to be a bit odd. So last thing here, Dolphins and Niners this Sunday. Matt Lively, CBS News Bay Area. He covers the Niners. He's joining us now. This is the cliche. Well, how do you see Sunday's game shaking out?
Well, first, before I get to my prediction, is what we call a tease in the business, I do want to tell you, I asked Deebo Samuel about Mike McDaniel today and his fashion particularly, and he said he never understood why he wears such big shoes. I don't know if that's talk in Miami. I don't know if that's something that's discussed often. He had lovely things to say about his former offensive coordinator, but that was one thing that came to be. But with that being said, I will say I think that Mike McDaniel fills those big shoes this weekend and beats his former team. I'm going to go 30-23 Miami over the Niners.
Mm. Wow. So you think the Dolphins put up 30 points potentially without Jalen Waddle against this defense? I know a lot of people down here would love to see that type of bounce back performance from the offense. Matt, thank you for taking the time. I was going to give you a moment to gloat about Arizona State making the playoff, but unfortunately we're out of time, so you don't have any opportunity to do so. We'll just have everybody imagine what you would potentially say, given that everybody down, it would be a little antagonistic given that Miami flamed out at the end of the season and missed the playoffs. So to have you come on here and gloat about irrelevant Arizona State making the postseason, the college football playoff, I don't think it'd be a great look. So I'm not going to give you the time to do that. But I do appreciate the time that you took.
They couldn't beat Syracuse, okay? That's all I'm going to say. Thank you for Jimmy Kimmeling me right there with Matt Damon, but you made my point for me anyways. Go Devils.
All right. Get him out of here. That's Matt Lively, CBS News Bay Area. He covers the 49ers. Thanks so much for joining us.